to the Columbia Center for Spiritual Living, a welcoming and diverse community whose vision it is to contribute to a world that works for everyone. The inspirational message you are about to hear will expand your idea of what is possible in life right now and affirm your soul's knowing in taking that right next step towards your greatest good.
Some of you may be familiar with the song, "How Could Anyone Ever Tell You?" That you are anything less than beautiful. How could anyone ever tell you that you are less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply I'm connected to your soul. Which feels like quite the perfect song for community. And so I'm going to invite you to stand, to give yourself freedom to move about, to connect with each other as we sing this a cappella to one another. To start the talk portion. Now, with any kind of luck, I'll start it in a key that works for some of us. Maybe even for myself. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you are less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you you are anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. What if that is what community is all about? What if that is how the divine wants to create and express as community? A community that really understands, that is so deeply anchored in knowing the truth of each individualized being in the community, that every time we come together, every time we cross one another's minds, our first thought is, how could anyone ever tell you that you are anything less than beautiful? When we have conflict with one another, and we will, because we live in a human realm, and sometimes we disagree. And perhaps conflict isn't so much a negative as it's part of the polishing process. Hey, I'm pretty sure everybody knows about a rock tumbler. And you put rocks in a barrel, and the barrel just gradually spins on a wheel, and it has different levels of grit, and the grit bumping up against, the grit conflicting with the semi-precious stones in the mix that are of a different hardness, knocks away the matrix, what doesn't belong. If you have jewelry that contains a stone, that stone starts as an unidentifiable precious gem. If you were to find a diamond uncut, you would likely not know that it was a diamond. Because diamonds, look, most of us have seen opaque white gravel, yellowish, kind of clear but not really cloudy white gravel. That's what rough diamond usually looks like. And so it's easy to toss it away, not knowing what it is. Opal. If you don't know what rough opal looks like, I encourage you to Google it. It looks like white rocks, white opal, gray-based opal from the Mintibi mines in Mintibi, Australia, look like gray gravel. Until you spot this line of fire going through the middle. And perhaps some of our interactions that are a bit uncomfortable are that fiery line in us that is just waiting to be polished. As a lapidary artist, I learned how to cut stones. I learned how to do cabochon work. And cabochon work is the smooth cut. The ones that have all the edges, those are faceted stones. I couldn't facet a stone. If I had to, I can freeform facet, but faceting machines confuse me because there's a whole lot of numbers and you have to lock them in and do everything the same, and I rarely do anything the same twice. So that's not my thing. Cabochon work, you work on the perfect form of the stone. And with opal, opal is a fascinating stone. Because you can see the line of fire, but it's just at the edge. And the goal is to polish it in such a manner that light refracts so that that fire is brilliant throughout the top of the stone where everybody can see it. And you can go from a piece of $35 rough opal to an opal that's worth thousands of dollars. And then, if you go 30 seconds too long, you're back to zero. Because now it is worthless. Because you've taken away the perfect expression of that stone. And perhaps community is about learning to allow ourselves to be polished, to surrender to the grit, if you will, and learning how to be with one another, how to recognize the fire in one another, allow it its own process of emerging, to not bail on one another before we reach our perfect expression of brilliance. How to be vulnerable with one another. Vulnerability in this human realm, my experience, it's not a thing that we welcome. Anybody in here wake up this morning and think, how can I be really vulnerable today? Anybody have that thought? No. Because we've been taught that vulnerability is unsafe. What if it's not? What if it is the safest thing you can do? What if vulnerability is a willingness to surrender to the process of allowing all of the conditioned thinking, all of the matrix, the mental matrix, to be removed? So that you get to experience the full brilliance of your spiritual self. What could be more safe? And what could possibly be more uncomfortable at the same time? See, I think we confuse safety with comfort. Right? If you're injured physically, chances are you need medical care. It doesn't feel good, it doesn't feel safe to allow total strangers to arrive in an ambulance and care for you. You don't know them from Adam's house cat. You don't know that they actually paid attention during their training. You know they have a badge that says they're trained, but you don't know, right? And so there's a level of trust that necessity creates that we lean into. And then they roll us into an emergency room of unfamiliar medical professionals who, again, where did you graduate in your class? Right? Now, maybe I'm the only one that has those thoughts, as if it even really matters. But I'm taught that it matters. I want the one who graduated first in their class without any thought that maybe they cheated their way to the first in their class. Right? Because I'm not taught to think that way. My conditioned thinking says if you graduated top of the class, you're the smartest one. Maybe they're not. Maybe the one who graduated last in the class was a single parent raising kids working two jobs. And maybe they're the most resourceful one in the bunch just because they graduated, because they figured out how. But my conditioned thinking doesn't allow me to consider that. And so maybe in this community, maybe the person that irritates you the most is the greatest gift. Because maybe what irritates them about you is a reflection of you that you're unwilling to deal with yet. Perhaps it could possibly sometimes roll out that way. Right? Because what if there's this phrase that I learned a long time ago in metaphysics, if you spot it, you got it. Right? And so if somebody else's behavior you find it really annoying, you might want to spend at least a moment exploring, where do you behave like that? And don't get stuck in the exact scenario. See, that's easy to do. It's easy to say, well, I've never done that. And we look at the condition. But where have, you know, if selfishness is at the core of it, where am I selfish? If being a know-it-all is what irritates you, where do you show up as a know-it-all? If being dismissive, being dismissed is what irritates you, where do you dismiss other people? Maybe in completely different ways. My experience is if it annoys me, it is somewhere in me. And sometimes I have to dig pretty deep to find it, because sometimes maybe it's just me, but sometimes I have to navigate a little bit of denial that's even in me. Maybe it's just me. I can entertain that. My experience on planet Earth for 64 years tells me it's not. And the beauty of it is we get to create a community that is real. I studied community in ministerial school. And there's a thing called faux community, the look-good community, where everybody shows up and we're really nice. And nobody's telling the truth. Everybody's acting as if, and there is zero connection between the members of the community. I don't want to minister in that community. And I don't believe I am. I have had conversations with some of you who have been willing to challenge me. Thank you. Thank you. Because you being willing to challenge me allows us to build a relationship. Allows us to do exactly what Spirit does. To evolve in reciprocity. See, that's the way life works. That's the way creation works. It's a reciprocal relationship. And so there has to be a full circle reciprocity. We have to learn to ask. We have to learn to receive. We have to learn to give. We have to learn to ask, to receive, to give. It's each of those things. We get to learn to be vulnerable. We get to heal this metaphysical misunderstanding that when something happens in your life, it means you did something wrong in your thoughts. I've watched us do this for years in metaphysics. When people need community the most, they go away. Because somewhere we have instilled in our teaching our own version of guilt, shame, and blame. This nonsense, and I do mean nonsense, it borders on spiritual malpractice to look at one another, and when someone is in crisis or any level of discomfort, to say to them, what's in your consciousness? They created that. No. Because here's the reality, there's one consciousness. And so perhaps before you ask someone else what was in their consciousness, which doesn't actually exist, ask yourself, what was in your use of consciousness that created their pain? Because that's how consciousness really works. Any thought, every thought, all thought is acted upon and manifested. And so we heal the whole. This whole year is about wholeness. Okay. And so from the perspective of wholeness, instead of wondering how somebody else used consciousness to hurt themselves, we get to recognize that, oh, there's one consciousness. So the same consciousness is operating in, through, and as me that is operating in, through, and as them. Where is the availability for me to know and heal whatever is unfolding in consciousness? Because it's all thought. Ernest Holmes says over and over again, there's no such thing as your mind and my mind. There's just mind. And so what if we come together as community, allow one another their perfect, messy, flawed human journey, that we really do stand behind our words, that we celebrate one another, that we don't tolerate one another. What an insulting thing to do. I'm going to tolerate you. No, thank you. No, thank you. I will share this story with you, and then I'm going to wrap up. In my first pulpit, I had a congregant who literally campaigned throughout the community to have me be the minister, with full knowledge, mind you, that I was a female-to-male transgender person married to a black woman. And then the moment that individual didn't get his way with something, he decided it was okay to refer to Deborah by the N-word and threatened to shoot me with a Glock 17. Now, that's horrible. In the earthly realm, yeah. But there's a gift in it. Because when Deborah and I were processing the conditioned realm after I made sure that we were safe and got the heck out of there. Because I'm not going to be the next front page story of a shooting in a church. But what we heard ourselves saying, and this is the gift, this is the friction, how rubbing against things can polish us, even when it looks horrible. What we heard ourselves say was this: you know, I don't get it. All we're asking for is to be tolerated and on a good day accepted. And we hurt ourselves. We hadn't even imagined that our lives, how God was expressing it us as us, was worthy of celebration. Wasn't part of our idea of ourselves, because we were so deep in the world's conditioned thinking. And that moment, we made a pact that never again would we be in community where we were not celebrated. Because every expression of God is worthy of celebration. Every single one. Even the ones you see on TV where you go, oh dear God. And we know they're there. And they're there differently for all of us. Right? Even if sometimes you're the one you look at in the mirror and go, oh dear God. You are worthy of celebration. And our opportunity as community is to learn how to be with one another in the messiness of the process. We get to learn how to polish ourselves, how to make space for other people to be polished, how to stay in the game, how to create a community that expresses the infinite. That's what we get to do. I believe that's what we're doing. And I also believe we have room to grow. I invite you to know that this community has already grown. Don't get stuck. Don't get stuck in the conditioned visual of empty seats. Our job spiritually is to see it grown. Not to know it's grown once we see it. We get to see it before we see it. To know it spiritually. Then we will know it physically. When we do see what we don't see, we will see what we can't see. That's how it works. Faith is not, you know, Hebrews 11:1, faith is the substance of things not seen, but hoped for. It doesn't say faith is the evidence of everything you see and weren't even aware you were hoping for. That's not faith. It takes absolutely no faith for me to know that I'm holding a bottle of zero Gatorade. There it is. No faith required. It does take a certain degree of faith to know that when I go to the grocery store, it will be there. That takes a certain level of faith. Right? And so we get to grow our faith muscle little by little. How do you grow it in community? You begin to trust someone. Someone. Just pick somebody and begin to relate. Begin to communicate. Begin to share. When you're in the position of listening, if you catch yourself wanting to not listen, just remind yourself, whatever they're talking about is not about me. They're talking about them. No matter what they're saying, even if they use you, they're still talking about them. Right? It's that first agreement, personalize nothing. And be fully present. And just listen. It's amazing how close we will get if we just start listening to one another. So we start there. And we go from there. And so I'm going to ask you to go into prayer with me and to know with me that there is only one and that it is expressing itself uniquely as Columbia Center for Spiritual Living. That the perfect mix is always present. The perfect variety of the infinite individualized is always present. Because that's how it works. That's what it does. It expresses its infinite nature in, through, and as all creation. To know with me that Columbia Center for Spiritual Living is brand new every day. That it is never a static creation. That it is alive and growing and breathing and changing and evolving and polishing. That there is a thread of brilliance. That there is a fire at the core of this community. Seeking expression as this community. I invite you to know a sense of gratitude with me that we each get to be a part of that. That we get to choose. We get to choose to be in the tumbler together. To be polished and to polish. And we get to choose to celebrate one another. We get to celebrate the process. We get to stay and go and come back and stay and go and come back. That there is freedom here to be. And that the consistent thing, the thread that is always present, is love. To know that with me, to celebrate that with me, over and over again, when this community comes to mind, to anchor in the prayer that all is well, that life is expressing as Columbia Center for Spiritual Living, that each individual member is called to be exactly what they're called to be, and there is space for all to be, and to giggle with gratitude that's the way it is, and then to let go, to show up, and to be about the business of being. And to anchor this with me as we say, Ashe, Shalom, Aho, Amen. And so it is.
Thank you for listening. If you have received a value, we invite you to share this podcast and check out our website, columbiacsl.com, to sign up for our weekly newsletter, providing thought-provoking blogs and details on our upcoming classes and community events. And we always are pleased to hear from you. You can reach us at podcast@columbiacsl.com. Thank you. Blessings on your journey.